Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
I want to talk to you this morning about Unitarian Universalists being comrades in skepticism and faith. Now, by comrades, I do not mean that old use from the Soviet Union of members of the Communist Party addressing each other as comrades, though I have had several in my congregations over the years. In fact, in one congregation, I officiated the funerals of two parishioners who were members of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of the United States. But that's not how I'm using comrade this morning. Nor like Boris and Natasha and Rocky and Bullwinkle. But in a more common and general meaning, as it's put in Merriam-Webster's online dictionary, an intimate friend or associate or companion, and companion being one that accompanies another. So by comrade, I mean people who accompany each other and close to each other, who are intimate friends. By skepticism, I again will turn to the dictionary definition, an attitude of doubt, either in general or toward a particular object. Also this definition, the doctrine that true knowledge in a particular area is uncertain. The method of suspended judgment, systematic doubt, or criticism characteristic of skeptics. Doubt concerning basic religious principles. I think we can live with that one. But it gets trickier when you look at what the dictionary says faith is. Allegiance or duty to a person, fidelity, sincerity, okay. Belief and trust in and loyalty to God. Belief in the traditional doctrines of a religion. Firm belief in something for which there is no proof. Something that is believed especially with strong conviction. Especially a system of religious beliefs. And that's pretty much the common definition or definitions of faith. But it's inadequate. They are inadequate. Although they are not incorrect. And I'll say more on this as I proceed. So comrades, skepticism, faith. We are comrades in skepticism and faith. And Unitarian Universalists are good at both skepticism and faith. As skeptics, we eschew creeds, the forms that traditional doctrines take, and we question what is handed down to us and not just in religion. I haven't seen it lately, but there used to be a bumper sticker with the flaming chalice on it that says, "The question is the answer." Much in tune with the story you heard about Mariah Mitchell. We question what is handed down to us and not just in religion. Now, as far as I can tell, Hosea Hudson, from whom I've read, was neither a Unitarian nor a Universalist. But he was a Christian churchgoer, a labor leader, and a member of the Communist Party. And like many African Americans in the early mid-20th century, he stayed within the church even as he challenged it, as you heard in that passage. But some African Americans who lived in northern cities became Unitarians, and in the mid-Atlantic states, Universalists. A lot of people don't realize that beginning in the late 1800s, there were African-American Universalist churches planted in parts of the rural South and in some of the southern cities. But for Hosea Hudson, Christian beliefs were a given, but so was science. And you hear that in the brief excerpt from his narrative. But in some ways, it could be the story of many you use as they go through life, of growing up in a religion, learning about science, finding it doesn't all fit together for them, and moving to something else. You heard part of the story of Mariah Mitchell, who actually died 9 years before Hudson was born. She was the first female professor of astronomy at any American college or university, and indeed the first black female professor of philosophy, of astronomy at any American university. She learned astronomy from her father in the island of Nantucket, a whaling port, where the main business depended very much on knowledge of the movements of the stars and planets across the sky. She learned from her father how to use a telescope and the mathematics of astronomical computation. By age 14, she could adjust a ship's chronometer. As a young adult on Nantucket, she worked as a teacher and a librarian, and as you heard from Johanna Seal, in 1847, she discovered the comet known as Mitchell 1847 VI. And she was raised a Quaker. There were a lot of Quakers in the whaling cities of New England in the 1800s. They're big in New Bedford, too, and the other ports. But the Quakers of Nantucket were very strict, and partly on the influence of Channing and partly under her own chafing, she eventually separated from them and began attending the island's Unitarian Church, which she did for 20 years, until she left Nantucket to be a traveling companion to a young woman crossing the continent in 1857. And traveling across the continent, she saw slavery and poverty and female oppression from which she had been sheltered to a great extent on Nantucket. On that trip, she visited the Unitarian Meadville Seminary, now known as the Meadville Lombard Theological School, but then it was still in Meadville, Pennsylvania, before it moved to Chicago. In 1865, she became professor at the newly established Vassar Female College. She was, in fact, the first faculty appointment. It took 5 years for the founders to agree that women could be professors at a women's college. And one of the things that she endured through nearly 30 years on that faculty was the requirement that students and faculty attend chapel. And there were Baptists on the board, and they gave her a great deal of difficulty because of her Unitarian beliefs. In fact, one of them even called her a Theodore Parker Unitarian, which she was not. She was a Channing Unitarian, which was liberal but not as radical as Parker's version of Unitarianism. And in fact, she was a devotee of Channing, who is known as the father of American Unitarianism. She was also known at one point for having told the college president to cut the prayer short in chapel because it's interfering with her recording the transit of Saturn across the sky. Required very precise observation. Well, once she had left Nantucket, she got to meet other independent and achieving women, became part of the movement for women's rights and education. And she got to know Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Lucy Stone, and Susan B. Anthony. And she was, a year after she discovered her comet, the first woman to be invited to a major scholarly organization in the United States, the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. And she was invited to more as the years went on, and she continued her work. But she remained through her whole life both a theist and a scientist. Her belief as a theist consisted of the fact that she believed God existed and God was good, and the trappings of most church teachings were not terribly interesting to her. but she sounded very Unitarian when she wrote in her diary one day, "How much talk there is about religion. Yesterday I had a Shaker visitor and a Catholic, and the more I hear, the more or less do I care about church doctrines." Very skeptical. Still, she would write, "How strange that some people cannot believe both in the book of nature and the book of God." Her only belief about God was that God existed and was good. And as I said, the elaborations of organized Christianity were of no interest to her. Mariah Mitchell was, I would argue, good at both skepticism and faith. So skepticism, yes, Unitarian Universalists are really good at skepticism. Always have been. It was skepticism about the doctrine of human depravity, the sinfulness of human nature, that led the Unitarians to split from the Trinitarian Congregationalists. Now, Channing was a Unitarian for sure in his doctrine of God, that is, God was a unity and Jesus was not God, but a prophet. But that to him and to most of his fellow Unitarians was less important than the doctrine of human nature. Where the Unitarians differed from other Congregationalists was their belief that human nature was essentially good, not necessarily perfect, but essentially good. Whereas most of Christianity taught that human beings were essentially sinful or depraved. And that was the big difference. Not whether God was one or three. That wasn't nearly so important to the early Unitarians. So that skepticism of traditional Christian teachings. It was skepticism about revelation and the veracity of biblical texts that led Theodore Parker and the generation after Channing's to posit the notion of absolute religion that would be proven not by revelation or miracles, but by the work of the human conscience. It was skepticism fueled by science that led to the openness to science in the late 1800s that laid the groundwork for religious humanism among Unitarians, Universalists, and Jews late in the 19th and in the early to mid-20th centuries. And it was skepticism about the exclusivity and primacy of Christianity that led to the great involvement of Unitarians and Universalists both in the Parliament of the World's Religions in 1893, which brought religious leaders of all faiths from around the world to Chicago. And an interesting aside on that was that the General Secretary of the World Parliament was a Unitarian minister, Jenkin Lloyd Jones, and a General Secretary in that day meant an executive director or chief executive. And the leader of the women's division was a Universalist woman minister. And two Universalist women ministers presented major papers at that parliament. Just an interesting aside. So it was skepticism of the status quo and the biblical arguments in support of the status quo that led some Unitarians and Universalists to be active in the movement to abolish slavery, to secure the vote for women, to advance socialism in various forms, and to support organized labor. And for others, to be skeptical of what they viewed as radical threats to established institutions. Skepticism can work in different directions. And that clash of skepticisms goes all the way back to John Adams and Thomas Jefferson in the shape of the Republic right after the American Revolution. They were both skeptics of what existed, but they were skeptical of each other's solutions as well. Today, that affinity for skepticism makes Unitarian Universalism a home for people of diverse religious beliefs and social attitudes. And this is why there could be many Republicans who are skeptical of Orthodox Christianity and communists who are skeptical of capitalism in our congregations in the middle decades of the 20th century. And they were friends with each other. It is why we have for at least 30 years been a congenial home for libertarians as well as for liberals. And that affinity for skepticism does not result in all Unitarian Universalists reaching the same conclusions about anything. And there are a lot of diligent skeptics right here at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood. Lots. And some have followed their skepticism to strong conclusions about the nature of reality, and others remain skeptical about any one explanation or set of beliefs, even the ones they find congenial to themselves. For myself, I'm always skeptical of any statement presented with absolute certainty, even when I agree with it. Yeah, it's rough sometimes. Ridgewood Unitarian Universalists are in tune with Carl Sagan, who is not one of us, but definitely a fellow traveler, who said, "Skeptical scrutiny is the means in both science and religion by which deep thoughts can be winnowed from deep nonsense." And I'll tell you, with our open doors, there's plenty of deep thought and plenty of deep nonsense in a lot of our congregations. But what about faith? I would argue that we Unitarian Universalists are just as good at faith as we are at skepticism, but not in faith as it's defined commonly. As I'll re-quote the dictionary on this: allegiance or duty to a person, fidelity or sincerity, belief and trust in and loyalty to God, belief in the traditional doctrines of a religion, firm belief in something for which there is no proof. We definitely don't like that one. And something that is believed especially with strong conviction, especially a system of religious beliefs. None of these are untrue for many people, but they have been inadequate for at least a century. Early in the 20th century, the Universalist theologian and minister Clarence Russell Skinner wrote of, and here I quote, "a paralysis of faith that crept on unaware because we mistook faith for belief." But the two are not necessarily synonymous. Belief digs itself into the trench of creed. When belief takes the place of faith, creeds become paramount. When faith is dominant, deeds become the test. So that was at the beginning of the 20th century, that the notion that faith was just about beliefs was already being challenged. So faith is not a set of beliefs or the acceptance of a set of beliefs. What is it? Skinner and his good friend, the Unitarian John Haynes Holmes, led the drive in their respective denominations, which are still separate at that time, to make deeds the test of religion, in fact, the content of it. Each in a thoroughly non-creedal, non-doctrinal congregation. Skinner at the Community Church of Boston and Holmes at the Community Church of New York. And Unitarians and Universalists were not alone in the drive toward creeds, and certainly other ministers than Holmes and Skinner pursued that same path. There were similar churches in places like Kalamazoo and Philadelphia. But they were not alone. I mean, this drive is what's at the heart of ethical culture, a humanist religious movement, and the social gospel within mainstream Christianity, which developed in the late 1800s and early 20th century, best known by the work of Washington Gladden and Walter Rauschenbusch, and influential within, if not mainstream Christianity, liberal Christianity to this day. But faith is more than turning congregations and denominations towards social service and social justice. It has a personal component that is prior to the institutionalization of service and justice work. And that is why we individually join together in faith communities such as the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood. This prior element is what makes Unitarian Universalist congregations with a strong social justice bent something other than advocacy organizations. So what is this that I mean by this faith if it's not about advocacy and deeds alone? Well, the reading from Scotty McLennan provides a brief answer. Faith, he writes, is an orientation of the whole personality, a total response. It is not just belief. And he goes on to say how beliefs can be expressed in propositional form. But this is his main point. Having faith means that our lives hold together and make sense at a deep level rather than seeming ultimately awry, askew, or absurd. So faith is how we live in relationship with the world. It is a conviction, not that certain statements about God or the universe are true, but that life and the universe in which we live make sense and have meaning. Faith can include traditional events such as traditional beliefs such as the Christian Trinity, or not. It can include reason. For us, we think that's absolutely essential, but that's true in even more traditional religions where reason plays a part. Faith can be humanistic, theistic, pantheistic, polytheistic, or whatever, if it gives coherence and meaning to life and one's understanding of the universe in a way that one lives fully and acts out whatever beliefs one may hold in life. As a scientist, Mariah Mitchell had faith, not just in the God who is good that she believed in, but a belief in the efficacy of scientific investigation. She wrote, "The greatest benefit derived from the study of science is that it lifts you out of and above the littleness of daily trials. We learn to live in the universe as a part of it. We cannot separate ourselves from it. Our every act connects us with it. Our every act affects the whole. Standing under the canopy of stars and remembering their presence, you could scarcely do a petty deed or think a wicked thought." Well, this is an orientation toward life and a conviction that the universe has meaning. Although expressed in rational terms, it is almost mystical. And it is an inspiration, as Mitchell puts it, to live up to a high ethical standard. The great classical scholar and historian Edith Hamilton put it this way in 1948. "Faith is not belief. Belief is passive. Faith is active." And what I like to say is that whatever beliefs you may hold, they are only true false propositions until you act on them. That is to say, your very actions is what makes your beliefs true and makes your faith real. So you live your faith in relationship with family, with friends, with neighbors, with co-workers. You live your faith in your choice to be part of this liberal religious community. You live your faith in taking stands on the important moral and ethical issues of our time. You live your faith in serving others who need your help, sometimes in the simplest ways, but who also need your love and respect, and you live your faith when you give these to them. And you live your faith in your quiet and even frightened moments, when you wake in the middle of the night in fear or anxiety, but then wake up in the morning determined to keep on keeping on. If your faith and beliefs line up, hey, what could be better? So we Unitarian Universalists are comrades in skepticism and faith. We are companions in life. Comrades, we seek together the living, active faith that is life lived in integrity and meaning. We are skeptics. We don't settle for easy answers. We question everything. We don't trust any one single source of truth completely. And we have faith. Even when our questioning and lack of dogma, even with these, we live as if life makes sense. It does make sense. Even on those days when we find ourselves living with challenges and contradictions. And I know I sometimes have those days, and I suspect you do as well. So we are indeed comrades in skepticism and faith, and we are privileged to be able to make the most of it. Amen.